This is the Goalkeeper Roundtable, hosted by Dr. Bill Steffen, with co-hosts Jeff Shook, Dave LaTourette, and George Costellis. Welcome back to a special episode of the Goalkeeper Roundtable. In episode 11, we went big and invited Anton Dorrance to the table. Though he, quite likely, does not need an introduction, we should at least give credit where credit is due and note that he is a World Cup champion head coach with the USA Women's National Team and has 22 collegiate Division I titles on his resume. Anton is most known for his competitive nature, honesty, and a values-based culture that is integrated into his program at the University of North Carolina. While we thought about editing out parts of this recording, conversely, we decided leaving everything in would be uniquely Anson. You'll hear that, while he has been gracious enough to carve out time for us, he is concurrently helping Heather O'Reilly, one of his assistant coaches, run a training session at the University of North Carolina. Enough. Let's get started with Dr. Bill, GK, Shooky, Lotto, and the ultimate competitor.
Okay, good morning, good evening, good day, wherever you are. Welcome to the Goalkeeper Roundtable. We have a very special guest, as you heard in the intro, Anson Dorrance, coach at University of North Carolina, multiple, 22 national championships, Anson, counting the AIAW?
Yes, thanks for including the AIAW. No one else seems to include it.
No, I count it. Hey, it's a national championship and a World Cup. Also, congratulations to George Costellis and Jeff Shook, who recently had material published in the United Soccer Coaches Coaching Journal. So, again, a good shout out on their publication. But anyway, we're here to talk goalkeeping. So, Anson, you know, again, as I mentioned, our audience is goalkeepers and goalkeeper coaches and coaches who get stuck coaching goalkeepers, well, maybe field player coaches. But more specifically to your duties as a college coach, when you're recruiting and you're looking at a young goalkeeper, what are some of the characteristics that you would prioritize?
Well, all the things that everyone knows about, there's nothing, you know, horribly sophisticated or subtle about finding a goalkeeper that'll work for your program. But certainly your capacity to dominate a box with catching crosses is an element. Your capacity to be a shot blocker is an element. And the other things for me would certainly be in this modern age, being able to play with your feet. But what's becoming increasingly more critical for us are things like starting position. Certainly for me, because I love the semi-flat back 1-3-4-3. So for me, it's a keeper sweeper, which is why in 2012, we had a 5'4" goalkeeper beat out a world champion starter at a U20 level in goal because she played the high line so well. And that was Addie Gay, who's still an active professional. I think she might be in Norway now. And so all these things are critical elements for me. And then the other thing for us, and I'm working with a kid right now that I think has full team potential. She took us to the national championship final this year, Claudia Dickey. And for her to get to her potential, she's got to have a much better leadership command of the backs. She's got to develop what is a cliche almost. She has to develop a leadership voice. Because right now her voice is almost too soft. There's nothing commanding about it, but of course, you know, Billy, the evolution of trying to take these young women to their potential. She's just so reluctant to have an angry tone. She almost softens it too much, and then, of course, no one's listening to her. So those are the elements for me. And then the stuff I talk about all the time in terms of getting to your potential, the goalkeepers also have to fall into this. And those are sort of nine different qualities that can sort of take you to the love of the ball and sort of grit, coachability and this thing we're calling connection, which is trying to take a kid to her potential within a team context. Because what's vital, obviously, certainly if you want to have good chemistry, is to make sure all the players are interconnected in the most positive way. We tell them all the time, you're going to be the average of the seven people that you hang out with most. So we want to form chemistry within these elite teams. So all these qualities, I think, are critical in any player, honestly. But for goalkeepers, we include them in our team concept as well.
Okay, good. George or Jeff, you have a question for Anson.
Yeah, I've got one for you, Anson. So you've won 22 national championships. Several of those came back-to-back. Was there ever an instance where the goalkeeper who won a national championship was replaced by her understudy from the previous year?
No, but one thing we've always done, and I've never understood coaches that don't do this, if we have two goalkeepers that are relatively close, we're going to play them both. And in the past, we've alternated who starts, but at halftime, the other one comes in. And we are criticized for this on a regular basis by so many coaches, and I don't understand it. And so many programs are knocked out of national tournaments because their backup just doesn't have anywhere near the quality of the starter. And one of the reasons isn't so much a disparity of talent between the two, but just because you haven't invested in them. And so for us, we've always tried to split two. And then it's like a competition to see who gets to play in the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament. And it's got so many positive ramifications. So let me talk about what some of them are. First of all, you become wonderful with a training partner. You support your teammate because both of you want to shut out. And even though you're competing to play in the ACC tournament and the national tournament, it's not the sort of classic thing where the reserve is sitting there, you know, praying that the starter gets hit by a bus just so she can get on the field. It's just ridiculous. So for us, we're going to always try to play two. And I think it's really benefited us because when we do have an injury, the other one is completely ready. And why is that? Because they're trained in. And then they support each other. And obviously we try to recruit them in tiers. So we don't bring in, you know, four scholarship goalkeepers one year. We try to bring in a scholarship kid every other year. And we try to have a walk-on every year as well. So we can always have at least four kids in our program for training purposes.
Yeah. Anson, I might say, though, I think didn't, and I'm going back to my era, I mean, Tracy Noonan displaced Shelly Finger.
Yeah, you might have a better memory of that than I do, Billy. I, you know, if that happened, I honestly can't remember it. I'm almost 70, and pieces are falling off me physically, and I'm sure there are pieces falling out of my brain. So I have no defense except to tell you.
It just happened to be. It just happened to be. But that's good.
That. And also, the other thing that does, it certainly reinforces the fact that no one's safe.
Yes.
And the field players know that no one's safe. And one of the things I do hate about classical goalkeeping decision-making is they almost always go with the starter when clearly the reserve may have caught the starter or is working harder. So for me, these are all elements that are critical. So I try to treat my goalkeepers like my field players in a positive way.
Yeah, I appreciate the competition there. George, what have you got?
Coach, I mean, I love what you're saying because to me, you know, we were talking with Chris about this, and we, you know, and a big part of being a reserve is being ready. Do you have somebody with that level of experience, you're dialoguing with them, but are there moments that you're talking about right now where it's just like, you know what, they have caught up and maybe there's a bit of a disagreement. How do you manage that? I mean, obviously you're the head coach. Is it just your decision or is there a little bit of a counsel?
Well, basically, obviously I'm consulting Chris Ducor, or back when Billy was my goalkeeper coach, I'm consulting Billy. And we've never disagreed with each other. So it's not like whenever I've gathered my staff with me that anyone disagrees on who should be the starter. But what we have had on several occasions is the goalkeeper we bench disagreeing. And obviously I have no issue with that because we want them to feel that they are the starter because of what we just chatted about. I think self-belief is absolutely critical. And I will never debate a kid's self-belief. So I will not sit there and debate the kid and say, no, you're not as good as she is. Are you kidding me? There can't be anything more destructive than me debating a kid that she's not as good as the other kid I'm playing. No, I want her to believe that. I want her to keep working her ass off to try to fight for that time and spot on the field. I have no issue with that. And I just say, well, I'm sorry, I've made the decision, but be ready. You never know. If she gets hurt, you're on. And then, yeah, it's not complex. It's not like a vote. It's certainly going to be my decision. And if they disagree, I like that because then they feel they should start. But there's no real drama, although there can be on occasion, because obviously every player has to some extent her posse. And as we all know, that one of the most destructive things in modern athletics is the illusion that if they don't play, it's not their fault, it's mine. It's like that classic PowerPoint slide that I saw pre my 2012 season when the sociologist comes to UNC to talk to all of us coaches about the millennials that we were training. And I loved it because the first PowerPoint slide had the year 2012 on it. And so the first PowerPoint slide had my high school graduation year on it. It had basically 1969. So in 1969, you've got this kid coming home from school with all F's on his or her report card, and you see the parents screaming at the kid. Then the date shifted in the next PowerPoint slide to 2012, and now the kid comes home from school with all F's on the report card, and the parents are screaming at the teacher. So what's happened since I graduated from high school to the current era is right now these kids don't feel like they're responsible for themselves. They feel like they recruit every possible excuse for why they're not playing or not starting or this and that. And of course, the excuses are, it's my fault. And so what we try to do within our culture is we try to take each kid to basically a narrative that's the truth. Because as soon as you accept the truth and understand that you're the one responsible, you're going to invest more effort and time in changing your state on the team. And these things are all absolutely critical. We're trying to drive our kids to their potential. But heck, you've been around almost as long as I have. I'm looking at that wrinkled, bald head. And you know what? You know exactly what I'm saying is the truth.
did a little bit of studying on the millennials myself. So, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, one of the unique things about your program is, again, just the competitive cauldron, the matrix of all that data. Now, obviously, goalkeeping is different. You have different data. And when we spoke with Chris, we talked a little bit about some of the data he's trying to collect and how to use that data best to keep the decision as objective as possible. And so we had a good conversation with Chris about that.
Yeah, but let me share this because I don't want to be disingenuous. We also have a cauldron for the goalkeepers, as you know, Billy. But I never use that as the rationale for my choice. I don't need the data to tell me who to start, who to play, who to substitute, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's a tool we use so the kids have a consistent exposure to training performance. So I don't even look at that stuff to make a decision. I obviously look at it regularly to see if the kids are improving and are committed and competing, but I don't need that to sort out who I'm going to play, which is why for years it was interesting. Terry Laskevich, who's a former women's national volleyball coach, really liked the first book I wrote, Training Soccer Champions. And as a result, he went from volleyball clinic to volleyball clinic. And basically in that clinic, he recommended for all these volleyball coaches across the United States to buy the book. Why? Because he said the competitive cauldron is the way they should train their volleyball players with. There was a whole swatch and swath of the volleyball community that got it completely wrong, that they thought that you should use the matrix to see who starts and your substitution rotation. And then finally, he invited me in to do a clinic, And I basically shattered that myth, because nowhere in my book do I say you use that to select your starting lineup and your substitution pattern. And I sort of corrected that during a clinic I did with him, just to make sure these coaches knew that the value of the cauldron is to drive training performance and competitive fire. That's the value. Now, does it have some indirect value in sort of showing the player she's not there yet? Yes, it does. But I don't use it. I use it in my player conferences. I look at it regularly. It's a tool. We repost the results the day after every practice. It's a wonderful driver. But I don't need that to sort out who to start and who to play.
Yeah, I think that's one of the observations I have from working with the program, is that the players, as they age, they tend to view that more in a kind of, well, what I would say is a task mastery. They look at that as, how should I be improving in these categories? Not exactly where I rank, but how do I improve on this? Because it is objective. It's like, okay, I'm not good at this. I need to be better. So I'm going to go practice that.
Billy, you're spot on. I mean, obviously you worked with us forever, so you know how we do everything. And you're absolutely right, because very rarely in a program where I've got between 26 and 30 players, can I spend a couple minutes after every practice telling the kid how she did. We don't have that luxury. We don't have the time. But with the cauldron, holy crap, do they have a practice review on a bulletin board the day after every practice? Mm-hmm. And obviously what we're going to concentrate on are issues within the team context with a player or two that we're trying to take to another level. And that's where we focus a practice environment addressing, but we don't have time to chat with everyone. So the cauldron for me is a wonderful tool in all kinds of respects, driving performance, giving immediate feedback, but also to some extent showing them that, yeah, this is about where they are. And if you want to change your place in the chain, change your place in the cauldron.
Good, good. George.
Coach, you brought up a book, and I did read The Man Watching, and I remember there in the book, it mentioned that when you would go to recruiting events, you know, and again, yeah, I think you know the nature of recruiting, you can stay hours and upon hours, but it identified that there were moments that you saw a certain attribute and that was enough for you. And you knew that you wanted that player. Did you ever have that aha moment with a goalkeeper?
There's no question. One of my favorites is actually our current starter, Claudia Dickey. We're down, maybe Orlando, I can't remember, but we're down, I think, somewhere in Florida. And of course, when you take your recruiting staff with you, George, as you know, you don't gather on the same field. This isn't a social occasion. Mm-hmm. There are great games all over the place. He would tell me what field to go to. It was his responsibility to take me to all the fields, to look at all the players that we needed to look at. If I was at one field, he wasn't at that field. He's at a different field. Because he's trying to look at more talent like I am. And all of a sudden, I get this text, Anson, come over to, you know, Field 17 in this complex. I jump in my car, drive to a different section of this recruiting platform, and it was there to watch Claudia Dickey. And all of a sudden, there are like two separate moments where I'm thinking, holy shit, is this girl going to be incredible? And a part of it was her arrogance. There's a ball served into the box, and by the way, she's great on crosses. There's a ball served in the box, and she runs out there to take it in a crowd and doesn't use two hands. She one-arms it like she's rebounding in basketball, and then she doesn't even use the other hand. It's now tucked under one hand, and with her palm, she now palms it, and now she's walking out to the edge of the 18, palming a ball. She's just one-handed rebounded down to herself. She was so frigging confident. I'm thinking, holy crap, that's my goalkeeper. And so, yes, that was the moment where, you know, her, you know, we might advise her to come on with walk-on status. And no, that's when the scholarship money was going to get invested, because if she was going to be that confident, and obviously she had all the other tools, good height, good vert, good feet, you know, good decision making. She had some weaknesses. She wasn't very verbal. Her line was too low, but she was a good shot blocker. So we knew there were things that she was going to have to work on. But honestly, that was the moment where she went from a kid that we were recruiting to a scholarship athlete in our recruiting platform.
That's a brilliant story.
Yeah.
Jeff. Michael moment, actually.
Yeah.
The catch. That's
Anson, I've got one for you. And you can relate this to your program at North Carolina or what you see across the college game. But with the recruiting boundaries going global now, is there a particular region of the world that you're seeing putting more female goalkeepers into college soccer, or is it still predominantly from the U.S.?
Yeah, for me, I'm not going to recruit a foreign goalkeeper. What a waste. I mean, all our kids are brought up playing basketball. They've got great hand eye. The question for an American goalkeeper is, can she use her feet? But even someone like Claudia Dickia was great. At her high school in Charlotte, North Carolina, they had a great backup goalkeeper. So what did they do? Claudia was the frigging nine. So she was the center forward because she could jump. She was big. She had good feet. Then the other girl was in goal. Now, for penalty kicks, she would drop back into goal. But for the rest of the time, she was on the field. Why would we ever recruit a foreign goalkeeper given the American sports culture? And so we've never even looked at them. Doesn't mean there haven't been some good ones here. No. Clemson had a great English kid that I think is now with the English full team. So I'm not saying that all the foreign goalkeepers that come here aren't very good, but what a waste. We've got so much talent here. I can certainly find a great American goalkeeper, and that's what we try to do. We stay locally. Now, the foreign kids on the other positions, we're very aggressive in chasing the English. I'm an Anglophile. I was born in an English colony. I was raised in British colonies. I was born in Bombay, India. I've lived in Kenya and Singapore. My historical mentor is Winston Churchill. I love everything English. I love our relationship with him as an ally, because even now with the bloviating moron in power, the English haven't deserted us yet. Of course, they have their own bloviating moron. Maybe that's why they're attracted to each other. But so much of the rest of the world has sort of rejected the United States. Why? Because they're led by remarkable female leaders, which I have huge respect for. But I think the English will always stay by us. The rest of the world is deserting us, but I love everything about the English. We had a kid that was one of the best players in the world that was the best player on the English team in this last World Cup named Lucy Bronze. And England has now hired a former player of mine, Serena Wegman, to coach the English full national team. And of course, she was the woman that took the Dutch to the final. Hang on, Billy, I've got to get this training session going. Heather. Are you warmed up?
Yeah.
Okay, a little 1v1. We'll use that traffic cone there. Do you have a stopwatch? So one on, two off, one on, two off, one on, two off, one on, and then a 4-minute rest. So adult two-footer. She's a mother. What? Four sets of 1 minute. So it's on your clock. Just so you guys can be entertained, what you're going to have in the background is Heather O'Reilly playing one of my freshmen one-on-one. Heather just gave birth to a kid they named William O'Reilly Wary. So his nickname in our program is Wow, for obvious reasons. So Heather's trying to, you know, lose all of her mother fat in case Vladko needs an outside back for the U.S. Olympic team. So she's here being trained with Paige Tolentino, a kid that's won the start for me at left back. So we'll see if what Heather can do against one of my starters. So it's in your hands, Corey. So you can, obviously my head's too big. You can't see them, but they're in the background. We're in our stadium right now. So anyway.
We'll take your word for it.
Of course, Heather's asking, can we send this video to Vladko? Yeah. Well, obviously based on how you do, Heather. If she smokes you, we're not sending it to him.
Oh, no, but we'll sell it back to her.
Yeah, we'll sell it back to you, Heather. That's what the coaches on this call are saying. We'll sell it back to you if she smokes you, because then you can bury it. It's called catch and kill. Catch and kill. Trump does that all the time. All right, good. So I'm okay. So where were we? I lost track.
we had no track. We have no track. We're just going. Good. Fellas, do you have anything? I have a question, but go ahead.
Go for it, Bill.
Okay. Again, just in a more broad sense, I understand that you now officially will have a fall season. What kind of adaptations have your kids had to make given these unique times?
Well, it's interesting. We're out here with a freshman because we've got a wonderful bubble. We haven't had any issues with our bubble. But what happened was the lacrosse team, of course, is a spring sport. And most of the athletes, Billy, as you know, that are not football, not basketball, are in Avery Dorm and Carmichael Dorm. And just through incredible bad luck, two of my kids were in a suite with two lacrosse players that picked up the COVID. So obviously, when we're doing our tracing, we had to separate all of the freshmen from training with my the rest of my team. So for the last week, we've been just training the freshmen alone here in our stadium. We've still got one kid that still has another couple days to go before she can rejoin the team. But basically, we've had to separate the freshmen from the upperclassmen. We did COVID testing on Wednesday. All of them are negative, but this one kid still has a penalty because of what we call winning the Darwin Award. The Darwin Awards, as all of you know, it's a wonderful award that is given to this guy that is such a frigging idiot. He does something so stupid, he gets killed. And that improves the human gene pool, actually, which is why it's a Darwin Award. So any girl that, you know, makes a horrible mistake is extended a Darwin Award, even if she's not COVID positive, and then she's got to pay a penalty for that. So that's the way we're managing our bubble.
Very good, very good. If we get back to kind of goalkeeping, you know, again, I understand how you really like to have them play with that high line and be synced kind of with the backs. Are there any particular training exercises you feel would be really valuable for kids watching this and they want to be better and they want to be able to play higher? What kind of training suggestions would you offer a young goalkeeper?
Well, one thing, as you know, Billy, we do all the time is we like to play games where the goalkeepers are active, playing with their feet, but also coming out on occasion to play make. And so we play a lot of 4v4 tournaments, or it's actually 5v5. 3+ a goalkeeper in the penalty box, or 4+ a goalkeeper with the extension of the penalty box that goes sideline to edge of the penalty box. And so what happens in that environment, as you know, is the goalkeepers are very active. And they're not just, you know, shot stoppers. They've got to come out to close. They also have to come out to play make. And so that's sort of the beginning of us training our goalkeepers to play high off their line, to be a part of the team, in effect. And so for us, it starts with that. Obviously, it's got to end with the 11v11s. And ever since I've started studying with Raymond Verheyen, we've changed our fitness from, you know, doing sprint training for fitness, like 120s and cones, to alternating weeks between 11v11 fitness to 7v7 fitness and 4v4 fitness. So every week there's a different fitness platform, and it's all based on where we are in our cycle, because we cycle through all three platforms, because obviously the 11v11 helps you build a bigger engine, your lungs, but the 4v4 helps you build a better anaerobic base because you're always changing directions. And so for me, the fitness has changed. And the huge advantage we have with our goalkeepers with this is, holy cow, are they a part of winning and losing based on any of the three games we're playing. And so a lot of our training is done while we're playing in the three different fitness platforms.
I think especially with the 4v4, because it's smaller numbers, and if the four field players match up against the four field players, the goalkeeper has to distribute. They have to be a playmaker.
That's correct. And obviously, you can see them compromise when they make poor decisions with their distribution. And you can see their teammates getting really pissed at them when they make these poor decisions.
Yeah, that's
good. And trust me, there's no greater ire in the competitive cauldron than when your goalkeeper sucks. And boy, does she feel absolutely tiny, you know, when she's making the mistakes. So all of a sudden, the kid gets the loss because of a goalkeeper error. You can see the kid's just fuming on the way to, you know, the water fountain. I mean, they are just fuming, and they're not talking to the goalkeeper at all. In fact, their back is to the goalkeeper as they bury her in a conversation with a teammate. So yeah, the pressure on our goalkeepers, as you know, Billy, is huge in all these contests.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very good to keep the kids under that pressure. One of the things that I think is helpful is the fact that that exposes them to pressure. And, you know, many kids don't seek that out. What are the kind of instances can you think of where you are able to exert a bit of pressure on the goalkeepers to try and develop that ability to deal with pressure?
Well, one is very clear and easy. As you know, Billy, we believe in 1v1. We believe in it with our field players. We talk to our kids all the time. Is you have to have the ability to beat a player off the dribble, but also stop a player that's trying to beat you off the dribble. So we do, as you know, we do 1v1 actually two times a week. Some of it is excruciatingly exhausting. We do that once a week. But some of it is not that exhausting, but it's still the 1v1 duel. In all of our 1v1 duels, the goalkeepers are active. So what we'll do is, if we do 1v1 to cone, most of the players are shooting against a traffic cone with no out of bounds. But four of the players are actually involved in big goals with live goalkeepers. And that's an incredible environment, because the goalkeeper's win-loss is based on how many goals they give up in this 1v1. And halfway through the 1v1, I scream out, as you know, goalkeeper switch. So this way a field player can't whine about the fact that their goalkeeper sucked, because they've got this goalkeeper half the time. So for them, the goalkeepers then come together, and just like the field players, win, loss, tie. We have four goalkeepers. You've played against three of them. So what is your win, loss, tie against the other three? So for them, they're under huge pressure. And as a result, talk about training them to use their voice. Holy crap, are they developing their voice in that 1v1, because they are screaming at their kids to close so they're not scored on.
Yeah, it's great, because it also, again, but also for the same thing you alluded to earlier, the field players, they don't want to lose. They don't want to lose 1v1. And if a goalkeeper error causes them to lose, well, people will talk about it. So
just putting it behind. Yeah, Billy, as you know, the pressure is immense.
Yeah.
Heather, I like that 4A. Way to put her under pressure. Heather just tried to chase a long ball that was shot wide of the goal, and she was exhausted. So the bodies are being dragged over here. Corey, are they done? Okay, one more. Okay.
All right. We'll be quick. Jeff and Georgie, if you had a question, go ahead. One of you. Jeff, go ahead. Heather?
Jeff, you go first, all right?
Yeah, with you being in the college game for an absolutely incredible amount of time, is there one thing that you see consistently that the goalkeepers coming from high school and club have failed to address that they wish they could go back in time and address before coming into college to enhance performance?
Yes. First of all, thanks for that question. We've got to have these kids coming in with the confidence to tell upperclassmen what they should be doing. They have the best seat in the house to see shape. And as all of you guys know, and by the way, everyone on this call knows more about goalkeeping than I do. What all of you guys know is, if the ball is being attacked down your right side, they're going to score from your left side. So while the ball's coming down your right side, you have to organize your left side. So you've got to make sure that left back is tucked inside the girl that's about to score on you. And you've got to organize the opposite side. You don't have to organize ball side as much. Why? Because that's what everyone is looking at. But it's amazing how many goals are scored because your left back is asleep. And then the attacker from the right wing position on the other team slashes inside and finishes it or gets in behind her. So I think that's what we've got to do a better job at a youth level, teaching our goalkeepers, is not just to organize pressure cover on the ball side, because you've generally got a center back to help you with that, but it's the backside, the offside, the weak side that's going to lose you the game. And I think that's an area where we've got to address it more often with our young goalkeepers. And they've got to be verbally aggressive, because here's the dilemma. Freshman comes in, she's going to be so reluctant to scream at a senior left back that's fallen asleep, and she has to have the courage to say, hey, you know, goal side, hey, and make sure that player's awake, because they do have a tendency to fall asleep. Does that make any sense?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very much so. Very
absolutely.
Much so.
Coach, you talked about how you, when you have two talented goalkeepers, they're gonna compete to play. I'm just wondering, in those situations, has there ever been a time where you know the opponent, you have the scouting report, one of those goalkeepers has had some success, you just go with that scouting report and with experience that, hey, she's done really well against this team in the past? Or is it still that competitive cauldron and whoever is the best during that week gets the game on the weekend?
No, we always split.
We split, yeah.
So every single year I've been coaching here, we have a girl that plays the first half and another girl plays the second. Now, here's what we have allowed kids to be able to do. I have let the senior tell me if she wants to start or are you guys done? Corey, give me 4 minutes. So time it to 4 minutes recovery. What we do is we give the senior the opportunity to start if she wants to. And the reason for that is so many pro coaches look at your number of starts and there are all these different things about starting that's kind of cool. But here's what they learn relatively quickly. They want to be the goalkeeper in goal for the overtime. And this is where their evolution and maturity as a human being comes into play. So 1 year, and I can't remember, Corey, what year was it that we played Stanford out there and Leshnack was picking to start. And then when Claudia was in, we lost in overtime. All right, we're out at Stanford 2018. My senior goalkeeper has decided she wants to start every game, which means the rookie comes in at the half. We're out at Stanford. It's a 1-1 going into golden goal. And, of course, we get scored on. Why do we get scored on? Because this young kid is a deaf mute, and there was a totally unmarked player that rolls it in from 6 yards because the back had fallen asleep. If the senior had been in goal, that goal would not have been scored because she's a much better organizer in the box. And then after the game, I said, what do you think? And she says, I have to come in off the bench. I said, that's right, because all of the goalkeepers that play in the second half play the overtime. And so she made a great decision. Now, and this is also really good because it's maturing her as a human being to basically sacrifice the start in order to win. And then throughout the rest of that year, she came in the second half. She ended up winning the start. So we ended up in the national final that year. Stanford was eliminated earlier. And I'm very proud of her. And all the goalkeepers know all of our, you know, sort of culture and lessons and that sort of thing. And that's a lesson. So the upperclassman gets to pick. But here's what's ideal. Alternating is good. And they can pick that. Coming in the second half is best. And they can pick that too, but we'll always play two. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, hang on 1 second. Corey, 15 yards.
You guys have much more? Should we?
Can we wrap it up? Passing 40 in a row. 1, 2, 3, 4, 15 yards apart. It doesn't matter. Wherever the ball comes to. Okay, boys, keep going. Jason,
no, this has been great. We've got most of our questions answered, and we understand you're in the middle of this, so we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
No. And I'm Billy, we're okay. They're going to be doing a passing thing now. And I've got another like a 5 minutes completely free. So if you guys want to keep going, I have no issue.
Come on, Billy.
Okay.
Coach wants it.
And one of the things that I like to do, and I believe, and I think I could guess kind of like what you're going to say, but I'll check with you anyway. In terms of cross training, what would you recommend a young goalkeeper do beyond soccer? What kind of cross training activities would you suggest for a young kid?
I love basketball, especially if they're like a small forward, a rebounder, because that's, you know, watching a ball come off the rim, attacking it just like you would a cross. Claudia Dickey, the kid I was talking about that I love that rebounded that ball that I think will end up on the U.S. full team one day, came to UNC on a basketball scholarship. My basketball coach was going crazy because she saw her in a basketball tournament and she was so good. She said, Anson, please let me give her a full, because we weren't giving her a full. I think because her dad was very, very successful. She had signed with us on a book scholarship and our basketball coach was going crazy thinking that, you know, like with most basketball players, it was all about the money. I said, no. It's not about the money. This is an incredibly successful man that's educating her here at UNC. In fact, he was teaching in our business school, so money wasn't an issue. But she was in full panic, my basketball coach. So she insisted she offer my goalkeeper a full. So I had no issue, because I also have no issue with a girl, especially a goalkeeper, on the basketball team all winter and spring, just because of rebounding, but also because of vision, decision-making, because this girl at a youth level in basketball was the point guard. So holy cow, what is her distribution first class from goal because of her understanding of how decision-making and vision is a part of her basketball. I love basketball. but I also really love tennis. And you know this, Billy, and so do the other people on the call. If you want to be a great goalkeeper, it's all about moving your feet. Tennis is about moving your feet. I played freshman tennis at St. Mary's University in San Antonio, Texas, and it was all about moving my feet. And the only reason I was on the team is because I was a soccer player. Why? I wasn't a great tennis player, but no one could get a ball by me. And I always got there because of my feet. And because I got there because of my feet, I could crush it, because the way to hit a tennis ball with power is to be there early with your feet in perfect position so you can lean into it. And so for me, basketball number one, tennis number two. But honestly, and this is sort of interesting, holy crap, have we mined the lacrosse pond. Hang on one second.
Did they need to do it so many times?
No, that's one, 40 passes, they're done. Yeah. Now long service, long reception, 35 yards apart, 2 minutes, 40 yards apart, 2 minutes, 45 yards apart, 2 minutes. And after that one, give them 4 minutes rest. After all three of those. So lacrosse, let me tell you something about lacrosse. Holy crap. Have they given us starter after starter after starter? And you're thinking, that's crazy, because the lacrosse season is in the spring. So you mean you've got part-time soccer players starting for a team that ends up in the national championship on a consistent basis? And I'm here to tell you, yes. Vision is the same. Running with the ball is the same. Combativeness is the same. But here's the quality that lacrosse gives my kids that our game doesn't even give them. In lacrosse, because it's so hard in women's lacrosse to take the ball away from someone, you've got to be really good with your feet, staying between a lacrosse player and your goal, because unlike the men's game where you can hold off and just knock the shit out of them with your stick or check them, in women's lacrosse, you can't. You're not allowed to do any of that. So as a result, these women lacrosse players are so good at moving their feet to prevent an attacker getting in behind them. My center back and our team in 16 absolutely sucked. We ended up in the final four. Why? Because our center back was a lacrosse player, and even though she couldn't pass the ball from A to B, no one could go through her. My starting left back this season is a lacrosse player, and no one beats her. She made the U-20 roster, of course couldn't go because of her lacrosse season in the winter and spring. She made the U-20 roster as a left back, and she started as a freshman. She'll start for me again this year. She's phenomenal. Even Stanford couldn't go through her. She's so good at tackling and that sort of stuff. But the other quality she gives me, in lacrosse, you're accustomed to making these long runs with the ball, especially if you're a middie. This girl is a middie. So when she gets the ball, she's accustomed to comfortably running through someone over 40 to 50 to 60 yards. And as a left back, boy, is she good at running with the ball. So basketball one,
tennis two,
lacrosse three, but I might even put lacrosse two. So those three sports, I would put, you know, one, two, three in some sort of order. But also, hell, we love the track kids, especially the 400 meter runners. We press for 90 minutes. All of my track stars, and by the way, Jessica McDonald, the reigning world champion, was a 400 meter runner from Arizona that set a state record in Arizona, even though she had never run a 400 meters in her life until she broke the Arizona state record in the 400 meters. So I would put track four, and then if I had a choice, 100 meter dash first, the 200 meter dash second, the 400 meter dash third. But I have no issue with cross country, one of the best D mids of all time. And I think you were there for her career, her mind. I have a senior moment now, I can't remember her name, but she won four straight years of high school soccer in Colorado. Four straight years, the Colorado cross country champion. This girl's work rate, she refused to give her six, her defensive position at the six, away to Lori Fair, who was on the U.S. full team. Lori used to come into my office whining all the time about what she was so much better than whoever, I can't remember the kid's name in the six. You know, why wasn't, you know, she the six and this other kid on the bench? And I kept saying, now this kid gets to 60 duels a game. She only wins 40 of them. You only get to 50 duels a game, And yes, you win 35 of them, but she wins more duels than you through the course of the game. Anyway, so cross country.
Good news for those kids that don't specialize early on.
No, I don't. I don't want a kid to specialize. Whenever a parent calls me, I say no. I said if they're babies, gymnastics, and then you know, growing up, have them play every single sport they can. We're gonna have a kid here soon, I hope. I can't mention her name because she hasn't committed to us yet. But the dad has been asking me every step of the way whether she should jump into the DA and quit high school basketball, high school lacrosse, high school track. I said, hell no. I said, hold out. Basically say, you want my kid? I want you to give her permission to play every high school sport she wants to play in. And she's so good, they made the deal with her. So she's one of these DA players that was so frigging good. The DA wanted her. She took a DA team from like, I don't know, 10th out of 12th in their cohort to number one. With one change, she took them for 10th to number one, all because I refused to allow her dad to say, yeah, give up all the other sports, jump into the DA. I mean, all these frigging idiots that think that there's only one way to develop a player. They all ought to be lined up and shot. So anyway, there's my editorial on that. Play every sport you can.
Great, great, good.
And they're awesome. It's still there.
We're good? All right, Anson, again, we appreciate your time. We're going to let you go. Continued good luck this fall. I mean, I'm very happy to hear that you actually have a season. So can you have spectators?
Officially, no. Unofficially, yes.
Okay.
We don't have police guards outside. Come and watch every minute of every game. Obviously, try not to pick up the COVID. Wear a mask.
Yeah.
You know, please don't sit next to a Republican because he won't be wearing a mask. So anyway, yeah, please come to every minute of every game.
Great, great. Well, Anson, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, man. Yeah, boys, thank you. I love my colleagues. I hope you can tell. I never have any issue with any of this stuff. Please call on me because obviously I support everything about our game.
Thank you very much, Coach. Great.
Thank you, Billy.
Good.
We hope you enjoyed that episode at the Goalkeeper Roundtable. If you'd like to reach out with suggestions, comments, or questions, all of our email addresses are available in the show description. If you like the show, we'd love for you to subscribe to it, but also share it in social media platforms or with any other goalkeeper or coach who may find value in it. We hope you turn in to the next Goalkeeper Roundtable.